Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Kinky boots.
We're literally in the car. It's raining. We're in Chicago's Loop.
Yep. And we just walked out with a standing ovation on opening night. People dancing all over the place.
Yeah, that was that's a heck of a closing number.
That's a heck of a closing number. Heck of a good feel good show.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a real good time. And it was cool because Harvey Fierstein and Cindy Lauper were there, along with the director. I think his name is Jerry Mitchell.
Yeah.
Without consulting my program, I'm pulling that out of my ass.
Yes.
Who's a famous Broadway director whose name I should know.
But anyway, they
just all walked out on stage, and that was charming.
I kind of love that, like, we're making our own musicals. Like, we're telling our own stories. Because Cindy's an honorary queer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't get any queerer than Cindy Lauper.
Well, she's got a queer sister, and she's... Yeah. She's maybe our fiercest ally, you know?
Absolutely. So I had a really, really, really good time. I didn't know what to expect going in. I kind of expected that Cindy Lauper would write great songs.
They're great songs.
They're
I could actually hear some of the songs done in a different context. You know, change the lyrics so that it's not specific to a character name. There's some rhymes that use the character's name.
Yeah.
But there's some songs that I think, like that last song.
Yeah.
You could put a beat behind that. I mean, there's a beat, but I mean, you could put like a house beat behind it and put that in the clubs.
Well, she already has released "Sex Is in the Heel" as a, you know, dance.
She has.
Mix.
Oh yeah. And it's. She really. I think she really, more than anybody in the production cast, outdid herself. I think that for a pop songwriter to step out and write a musical, I thought she did a fantastic job.
Well, and you kind of think like everybody now thinks they can do that,
right?
Like Green Day or.
Right. The difference is that
else.
Green Day just used their songs, which is awesome.
Right.
And those are awesome songs, one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yep.
Jersey Boys, those songs already existed. Right. All those people, those songs already exist.
And this is all original.
This is original music. And this was her being challenged by Harvey Fierstein to write a musical.
Yeah.
And so the fact that she took on that challenge, I mean, even, you know, 9 to 5... the show didn't do well, but Dolly Parton's music got great reviews.
Right.
You know, it's... I don't know. That takes balls when you're already an established... I mean, Elton John is the one who sort of set the standard, really, because he stepped out and wrote something original and succeeded wildly. But you're right. I think a lot of people think they can do it.
Yeah.
Hence, we got the Caveman, you know, Paul Simon's musical, which, by the way, the music is extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it's not a musical.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know...
I agree with you, though. It's nice that we're telling our own stories, although we had a little chat about this. And I think I went in totally cold. Yeah. I mean, I knew that it was
you
about...
You don't know the movie.
I knew the plot. I knew that there was a shoe factory that was not doing well, and then they decided to make boots for drag queens, and I knew that. So that's the only thing I knew going in.
And I love the movie.
A lot of people love the movie.
It's a little sleeper little movie, but I've talked to, like... You know, my gay male best friends have never seen this movie.
This is what I was saying to you too, and I'm sort of curious what other people think. It's not like I have lots of drag queen friends, I have lots of transgendered friends, I have friends of the entire spectrum.
Right.
And yet at the time I think that this movie came out, I was a little bit like, is every movie where there's a representation of a gay man going to be about a drag queen? And I thought, and so I think I just didn't see it because I was sort of bored with the subject matter as a movie. Not bored with it as a subject matter for human beings, but for a movie. So I think I just missed it, and then it just sort of fell off my radar. And I do have to say, as much as I really did love this show and ended up, as it turns out, no one of the guys playing one of the drag queens, the Angels, it's still a play where all of the gay characters are... drag queens, and none of them have a romantic life.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a criticism for me. I get it. Harvey wrote it, so it's not like it was done out of homophobia or anything like that. But
it is. You know, it is also like how close are they going to stay to the movie? You know, and they did stay very close to the movie. You know, I felt like.
It's just interesting when I compare it to something I saw recently, which I'm sure probably Richard and I talked about, or maybe didn't, I don't, did he, I can't remember now if he reviewed Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yes.
Which I loved. And one of the amazing things is this queer character, who is not a drag queen, not that there's anything wrong with it, but that there's not a drag queen, and we do see his romantic life, you know, although he does end up single, well, they all end up single at the end, so that's different, but like, this movie... It's interesting. You know what's interesting is that both Perks of Being a Wallflower and Kinky Boots are intended for a mainstream audience.
Yep.
These are not indie, artsy projects. And it's interesting. I have to say I give kudos to that because this character, Perks of Being a Wallflower, is the most extraordinary character in the movie. And it's a pretty mainstream movie meant for young adults.
Right.
And Kinky Boots, I think, is meant for your average, let's go see a Broadway show... with lots of costumes and dancing and singing. And I think...
It's trying to be a mainstream musical.
I think it works.
Talking about, you know, I mean...
Acceptance.
But, I mean, it also is, you know... I mean, it is interesting that, yes, you know, as gay people, we have Modern Family. But, once again, those are not sexualized men.
Right.
You know, this is not, you know... falsettos or it's not that story being told or
right.
I don't know, I can't even think of one.
There's still a lot of stereotypes being thrown around and I get it.
But I mean,
it's
how
a more
can
interesting
you, but,
story maybe than your average like suburban gay couple, lesbian or gay male. But
I still think that the culture and even our culture, our GLBT culture, is still championing like RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, I mean, this is the stuff we want to watch. Like,
I get it. Don't get me wrong.
This is what's getting the ratings.
I'm the one who's been telling everybody that RuPaul's Drag Race is the best show on television, without irony, without. I think it's a brilliant show.
Right.
I guess I'm just saying, the reason why I missed the movie was at the time.
I thought,
can there be another story told?
Absolutely.
Does it have to be Priscilla? Does it have to be Tu Wong Fu? Will acceptance only come when straight women accept drag queens, which then convinces their husbands that they're okay? Like, I've seen this trope before.
Yeah.
But having said that, I enjoy the musical very much.
Yep.
There's a lot of heart in it for sort of queer movie fans too. Anyone who saw Die Mommy Die, Charles, what's his name? Who wrote Die Mommy Die? The playwright.
Charles Bush.
The film of his play, the beautiful young blonde boy who plays the son is now grown up, and he's the lead in this musical.
He's extraordinary. Charlie Price.
He plays Charlie Price. His name is Stark Sands, the actor, and he's a star, and he can sing.
He can sing. He can act.
He can dance. He can move. He's fantastic.
He's good.
Yeah, he's really good. And Billy Porter. who's a bit of a Broadway star. He sings his face off. He looks amazing.
He's a great, I wanted to say showman, but I mean, yep, he's a great showgirl. Is great. His well, this inner is one, showgirl
this
is one
number, if you see the show, this is one number that's clearly an homage to Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
I look to you.
And the angle, the tilted arms.
I mean,
that
his
kind of
makeup,
like a,
his hair, his yeah. gestures, the lighting, the even the song that Cindy wrote is reminiscent of like
a Whitney moment.
A Run to You, right? Yeah. It's like, it has that feel. Yeah. And he's sort of brilliant at it. I had a little issue with some of the consistency of the British accents. I'm not sure we ran into some theater friends of ours in the lobby afterwards, and we all were sort of wondering why they didn't make it...
American.
Well, yeah, Americanize it like the Full Monty.
Yeah. I think it's just... I think it would be a whole different... I feel like it would be a whole different musical if
I disagree.
It was American.
I disagree. I feel like it would be the same musical. I think the same story could be told in, like, you know, small town Ohio where there's... Or outside of Cleveland where there's a shoe factory.
Yeah. I guess Milan doesn't seem as far when you're going to go to Fashion Week and you're already in Europe, and when you're in America, that would feel maybe even more... Maybe that would be better. The stakes would be higher, but...
Right, to go to New York or something like that.
But, like, why would you go to Milan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. It's interesting because we did bump into two other gay men, both in the theater world.
Yeah, that was
walking out.
Right?
And all four of us, because I'm not a gay man, though.
Kind of.
But, kind of. In the theater world, I'm kind of a gay man. but we all four had different... likes and different
dislikes.
Besides
yeah.
and dislikes and what we wanted it to be and how satisfied we were, you know, and there was definitely the voice of one of those guys who was like, I've seen it, I've heard
it, didn't like it,
don't
didn't
do
like
it, don't
right.
like it. And yet I know plenty of, you know, people who will travel to New York or can travel to Chicago to see this.
Well, the
from
audience
small
loved
towns
it. The audience
who will
loved
love it, gay or straight, you know.
I loved it. I think it still needs a little work. I think they're tightening it up. I think that has an enormous heart.
Yeah.
And I think it has an enormous heart. It's really well sung. Really well sung.
Yeah.
And it's really well acted.
Yeah, costumes are gorgeous.
And that isn't always true. I mean, I saw the
Saging
out of town.
Is great.
So the out of town. I saw the out of towns of both Young Frankenstein and Adam's Family and found them both dreadful.
Yeah. But I didn't like Adam's Family here. I hated it.
That's what I'm saying. I found them dreadful. I didn't like them.
Yeah.
But this show, I think, is ready. I think it's ready to go. I think it's ready to be seen.
Oh, I think this show is going to do really well in New York.
I think so, too. I hope so.
I really
encourage... It's fun that it came here first.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, this city's really embraced it. And I felt like it was a really heartfelt... You know, we go to a lot of theater. So I see a lot of people stand up, you know, at the end of a show. And I felt like... You know,
people stood up because they wanted to, not because they felt like
they had to. People
stood
up because they wanted to, and they felt it, and it definitely, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, I would say run, don't walk.
Yeah, because...
And get a ticket.
Yeah, especially
because
if you like...
Just have your own opinion about it, but you won't, I mean, you will be happy that you were there.
In a way, it's an old-fashioned musical, right? It makes you feel good, it's glitzy. And that last sort of anthemic, be proud of yourself sort of song is so satisfying that I wish they had done two or three more encores.
Yeah.
You know, couldn't, like, if they had come out and sung again, wouldn't you have been like,
absolutely.
Yes, I would have sung along
and
danced.
And they could have dropped balloons from the ceiling.
Yeah, they could have come to the audience, they could have gotten people up on stage.
Which
that
is what they do with, like, Mamma Mia,
right.
You know, they
that
could have definitely had that moment. But yeah, I mean, I am glad that we're telling our stories, and
that's
I
a really
think
important
this
point.
Is an interesting, I think this is a sweet, you know, it's a sweet story, and I thought it was a sweet film, and, you know, to me, it's not really about drag queens, you know, it's really...
No, of course not.
Some of them are. I mean, Tu Huang Fu and, you know, Julie Newmar, and I haven't seen Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
But it's the same... What I mean is it's the same trope as, like I'm a drag queen, and sometimes I do it because I want to be fabulous, and sometimes I'm doing it because I'm hiding the pain of my childhood, and I have to get in touch with what is it, you know, the questions of what it means to be a real man, and when I was a boy, and what my father made me feel like... I think that tonight I was ready to see that story. I think when the movie came out in 2005, I was like, I get it.
But what I love about this too, and it's something you and I talk a lot about, is that it's such a love relationship between a straight man
and
a gay
that's
man.
The thing I want
and
to
that
say.
Is actually very unique.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's the story of, you know, I mean, Tu Huang Fu or Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is, you know, about this woman who comes, you know, this woman who... you know, becomes friends with these men and what she teaches that, you know, her about, what they teach her about being a woman and, you know, the mirror that they can provide, you know, of what's possible.
In literature, they call it the magic Negro, right? Like, there's always, Clark Michael Duncan, God rest his soul, only ever played the magic Negro, right? Like, the legend of Beggar Vance, right? The black person who comes and is wise simply by virtue of being. And we sort of have done that with drag queens.
Yeah.
Now, I sort of get it in that... you know, any of us who are queer, and particularly sort of transgender people, or drag queens specifically, because they are studying the society from the outside. You know, anybody who feels outside is looking in.
Right.
And so there are lessons to be taught. And I do have to say that one of the beautiful things about this play and the way that these two actors, Billy Porter and Stark Sands, play it, is that they never have the moment where the minute Stark Sands meets Billy Porter, it's the fact that he's an outrageous character, not that he's a drag queen.
Absolutely.
Or gay.
And there's never any uncomfortableness.
No, you assume that Stark Sands' character is modern enough that he has gay friends.
Yes.
And so he's a sophisticated boy, and that's not the issue. The issue is that the character, Lola,
is
so over the top.
So grandiose.
Right, that any sort of discomfort comes from that, not from the fact that he's a drag queen or that...
And also the misunderstanding that grandiosity, that flair, that drama is compensating, is the falsity. And not the truth.
Right.
Which I also think is really interesting.
Well, you know, it's that thing my best friend always says, my best friend David always says, is about the myth that the effeminate gay man is weak.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, David as my best friend and as a very, very sort of like almost cartoonish straight guy, except emotionally, you know, is very firm about the fact that he talks about that a lot with his other straight friends who may or may not say something about gay men. David's like, really? You think gay men in this culture are weak? How do you think they get from A to B every day?
Right.
You know, and I think that's part of the story that's being told in Kinky Boots too.
Absolutely.
Which I really do like.
Yeah.
I really do like. If I have any reservations, it's more like my theater snobbery about some certain moments. I think that they'll probably fix by the time it gets to New York and stuff like that. But it's really worth seeing.
It's so worth seeing. It's so great to have it kind of...
I mean, I cried. I was bopping my head.
Cried.
I was singing along with some of the tunes.
Yeah. It's totally infectious.
You literally leave humming the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You leave happy.
Old school.
Old school. I really like it. I say two thumbs up.
Me too.
They'll work out the kinks in the Kinky Boots.
Exactly.
By the time they get
to
Broadway.
I want those boots.
And the boots are fabulous.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and it's really to
There's also some really great supporting performances, too.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, you know, there's just this really great...
the ensemble's fantastic.
The ensemble is really great, and they work as ensemble, even though these two guys are really, you know...
The lead.
Really holding this thing together and allowing all the other people to do what they need to do. But it's truly, you know...
But they're doing... The rest of the ensemble is doing honest work, which isn't always the case in musicals.
Yeah.
You don't always want it to be, because musicals are sort of heightened reality anyway. But I think that this ensemble is doing really...
Yeah.
I think they're doing good stuff.
It's awesome.
I liked it a lot.
Go see it.
Yep.
Cyndi Lauper.
She did it again. She really did.
She did it again.
I can't wait to actually buy the music.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Mitchell and I are on the show. We got things to talk about. Great divas, I think we're going to talk about in music.
So. Yeah.
So Mitchell Fain, let's go to the GLBT News with Kirk Williamson, and also lots of theater going on.
Hey, Kirk.
Just besides, more than just the Kinky Boots, but don't miss the Kinky Boots.
Vancouver is home to Western Canada's largest LGBT population, and now you can enter for your chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction prize package to Vancouver, British Columbia. A safe and welcoming destination for diehard shoppers, avid outdoor thrill seekers, nightlife aficionados, and dedicated food lovers, Vancouver is a world-class city offering something for everyone. From sports pubs to drag shows, leather bars to dance clubs, lounges and restaurants, Vancouver's got it all. Plus, Vancouver Pride celebrations and the Vancouver Queer Film Festival in July and August, and Whistler's Winter Pride in February. Tourism Vancouver is pleased to offer you and a guest the chance to win a trip to Vancouver in 2013. For a chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction sweepstakes, Visit tourismvancouver.com/lights by November 30th, 2012 to enter. That's tourismvancouver.com/lights.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Saying the gay population has suffered a history of discrimination, a divided federal appeals court in Manhattan ruled that the Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. The Second United States Circuit Court of Appeals issued a 2-1 decision only 3 weeks after hearing arguments on a lower court judge's findings that the 1996 law was unconstitutional. In a majority opinion, the Second Circuit, like a federal appeals court in Boston before it, found no reason DOMA could be used to deny benefits to married gay couples.
The 28th annual AIDS Walk Los Angeles had 30,000 participants filling the streets of West Hollywood in L.A., and the walk raised $2,912,000 to fight AIDS and lift up the lives of those affected by HIV.
Former United States Senator Arlen Specter died October 14th in Philadelphia at the age of 82. Specter battled liberals and conservatives as a senator. His support for a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and passage of the Matthew Shepard hate crimes law was critical, as was his willingness to change his mind and oppose the federal marriage amendment in 2006 after voting for it in 2004.
New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg has given $250,000 to the effort to pass same-sex marriage in Maryland this election cycle. And Paul Singer, a billionaire hedge fund manager and major Republican donor from New York, has also donated $250,000. Singer, the founder of Elliott Management, has contributed more than $10 million to marriage equality efforts across the country. His son and son-in-law married in Massachusetts in 2009.
In North Carolina, Elon University's Student Government Association has voted to get rid of a Chick-fil-A restaurant on campus because of the restaurant chain's president's position against same-sex marriage. The association voted 35-11 to ask its food vendor to find another restaurant to replace Chick-fil-A. The decision now goes to the executive president of Elon's Student Government Association.
A slight majority of voters in Florida and Ohio, and nearly half in Virginia, support the right of same-sex couples to wed. In Florida, 54% of voters think same-sex marriage should be legal. 33% say it should be illegal. In Ohio, 52% believe it should be legal, 37% illegal. While in Virginia, the numbers are 49% legal, 40% illegal. The growing support is a sharp departure from just 8 years ago.
American Unity PAC, a group that encourages Republican candidates to take pro-equality stances, is donating $510,000 to help gay GOP candidate Richard Tesei in his competitive race against Congressman John Tierney in Massachusetts. Tesei, a former state senator, could be the first non-incumbent openly gay Republican elected to Congress.
Ryan Anderson, the gay Boy Scout who was kicked out of his local Boy Scout troop and denied his Eagle Scout award because of his sexual orientation, delivered more than 400,000 signatures to the Mount Diablo Silverado Boy Scout Council in Pleasant Hill, California. The petition urges the council to allow him to receive his Eagle award.
Family Equality Council released the findings of a new Gallup special report on LGBT people. The report, which found that 3.4% of U.S. adults identify as LGBT, also included groundbreaking data on LGBT people who are raising children. One result showed that LGBT women are equally as likely as non-LGBT women to be raising a child in their homes. The report also found that LGBT people are at a higher risk of poverty, with more than a third reporting incomes of less than $24,000 a year.
In Kentucky, openly gay resident Kevin Pennington testified in federal court that he jumped off a mountain in April of 2011 because he believed two men chasing him were going to kill him. Anthony Ray Jenkins and cousin David Jason Jenkins are charged with kidnapping Pennington, assaulting him, and committing a federal hate crime. Government attorneys say this is the first prosecution in the country charging a violation of the sexual orientation section of the Matthew Shepard, James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which was passed in 2009.
In Illinois, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Illinois Caucus for Adolescent Health, and the American Psychoanalytic Association filed a licensing board complaint against Bloomingdale mental health professional Paul McNulty, who practices reparative therapy, which aims to change sexual orientation. The complaint states, by offering and embracing scientifically unsound and potentially harmful services that reflect prejudice, Mr. McNulty appears to be in violation of the state's licensing standards.
In Tennessee, Memphis's city council approved an ordinance that bans the city from discriminating in hiring, firing, or promotion based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The council split 8-4 on both votes after a second emotional debate of the issue that filled council chambers again a month after the final vote was delayed.
In world news, in Russia, several people were reportedly injured when masked men stormed the Moscow gay night spot known as the Seven Free Days Club. Victoria Soto said that a dozen attackers broke in late October 11th to coincide with International Coming Out Day. As a result of the attack in the bar in central Moscow, 4 people were injured and 3 were hospitalized.
In Canada, transgender individuals in Ontario can now change their sex on their birth certificates without first undergoing gender reassignment surgery. New rules now allow trans people to apply to have the document amended by submitting a letter from a practicing physician or psychologist.
Norodom Sihanouk, a pro-gay former king of Cambodia, recently died at the age of 89 in Beijing. He became king in 1941 at the age of 18 and helped to bring about Cambodian independence in 1953. In 2004, Sihanouk spoke out in favor of same-sex marriage in Cambodia after seeing gay marriages in San Francisco on TV.
More than $20,000 was raised at the first AIDS Walk in China. The event took place along the Great Wall near Beijing and raised funds for the Chinese Foundation for the Prevention of STD and AIDS. More than 100 people took part, walking in teams or individually along the walk. China's AIDS Walk will now be an annual event and continue to progress further along the Great Wall to inland rural China.
In Senegal, journalist Tamsir Ndiaye Jupiter is to face a trial for a gay sex scandal. Jupiter, a celebrated columnist and employee of UNESCO, had sex with a male merchant, Matar Diop Diadne, in his office in UNESCO's headquarters in Dakar. Diadne then allegedly demanded large sums of cash, and Jupiter declined. Eventually, a fight ensued, and Jupiter reportedly stabbed Diadne. Jupiter is on trial for unnatural sexual acts, as well as illegal possession of weapons and causing grievous bodily harm.
Australian HIV infection rates increased by more than 8% in 2011. The annual surveillance study into sexually transmitted diseases in Australia shows the latest rise contributes to a 50% growth in infection rates over the past 10 years.
And in entertainment news, out actor Matt Bomer will be a guest star on NBC's The New Normal. Bomer will be the sexy ex-boyfriend to Andrew Rannells' character, Brian.
Tina Fey and Amy Poehler will co-host the 70th Annual Golden Globe Awards. Fey has turned down hosting the Academy Awards in the past. She and Poehler are friends and former SNL castmates.
Cinematographer Harris Savides died recently at 55. Savides shot 6 films with out director Gus Van Sant, including Milk, the movie about the late gay politician Harvey Milk, for which Sean Penn received a Best Actor Oscar. Savides also did music videos for Madonna, R.E.M., and Chris Isaak, winning MTV Awards in 1994 for R.E.M.'s Everybody Hurts, and in 1995 for Madonna's Rain.
There will be a film adaptation of the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Memphis. Memphis is currently touring the U.S. through next summer and won the Tony for Best Musical in 2010, and also won Best Book of a Musical, Best Score, and Best Orchestration.
Beyonce has been confirmed as the halftime performer in next year's Super Bowl. CBS will air the game and show February 3rd, 2013.
Executive producer Ryan Murphy revealed Dylan McDermott is returning to American Horror Story. However, he did not say in what capacity the actor will be returning.
Mario Lopez stirred controversy by giving a shout-out to Chick-fil-A. The new X Factor co-host tweeted, "Why does it seem like I always crave a Chick-fil-A on Sundays? Hashtag frustrating." Now people such as Dan Savage have criticized Lopez. On Twitter, Savage sent us this reply to Lopez: "Because you're a thoughtless jerk who just alienated the gay men you expected to buy your new line of crappy man panties? Lopez has a new line of men's underwear called Rated M that he has been promoting."
Rosie O'Donnell's ex, Kelly Carpenter, is set to tie the knot with American cabaret singer Ann Steele. Carpenter walks down the aisle with Steele June 1st, 2013.
And out actor Zachary Quinto of Star Trek and American Horror Story fame will join lesbian Tony Award winner Cherry Jones in the American Repertory Theater production of Tennessee Williams's The Glass Menagerie, Williams's 1945 play about an overbearing mother and her fragile daughter, will begin performances February 2nd, 2013 in Cambridge, Massachusetts for a run through March 17th. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 22nd, 2012... you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Celebrate a legendary moment as Giordano Dance Chicago soars into their 50th anniversary season. This dazzling engagement at the Harris Theater includes a powerful world premiere and popular favorites. Don't miss this performance by the award-winning company Dance Magazine, hailed as a burst of pure dance joy that left the audience breathless and ready for more. October 26th and 27th only. For tickets, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
Main Stage with Awkward Pause Theater presents Richard O'Brien's musical, The Rocky Horror Show, this October. You won't want to miss all the fun, the scandal, and high-energy performance of this top-notch cast this Halloween season. Don't dream it, be it. October 26th and 31st at midnight. Tickets at mainstage.com/rocky-horror.
Olivia Newton-John is coming to the Paramount in Aurora one night only. Sing along to the hits you love like Xanadu, Let Me Be There, and of course, Physical. This is her only Chicago area performance. One night only, November 10th. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Sometimes to find yourself, you have to get a little lost. Amanda Daynard's new musical, The Verona Project, is an electric hybrid of theater and live concert infused with original indie folk rock music. A modern fable inspired by Shakespeare's first comedy, The Two Gentlemen of Verona, the show takes an honest look at surviving love and loss. For tickets, visit VeronaNU.com, running now through November 4th.
The Indigo Girls are coming to the Paramount in Aurora in a rare full-band concert. Join Emily and Amy for a rockin' night of music stories, unforgettable moments, all in the acoustically perfect Paramount Theater. One night only, November 3rd. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater, the award-winning theater that brought you last season's Follies, the number one show of 2011 by the Chicago Tribune, presents Stephen Sondheim's Sunday in the Park with George, a soaring musical about a painter's struggle between creating art and living life. For tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com/Sunday, playing now through November 4th. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Well, we're now at home.
We're home.
It's dry and safe and warm.
It is.
So I wanted to just say, because we were talking about feel-goods, you know, I you and I both saw a couple of movies that delighted us, both mm-hmm. for different reasons. I saw The Pitch Perfect, which I thought was incredibly hilarious. And
I have not seen it yet. I can't wait to see it. And I promised Megan that I would wait to see it.
That Rebel Wilson is, I don't know where, what, stop the madness. Like, she's so freaking funny.
Yeah, where did
funny.
The hell did she pop out of?
She's just amazing, you know. I mean, she was in Bridesmaids. Mm-hmm. She was,
one of Kristen Wiig's roommates.
Yeah, she's just unbelievable. She's unbelievable. So that is a fun, fun thing. And then you saw the fabulous documentary on
Diana Vreeland. Oh, God, it's called Diana Vreeland, The I Must Travel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those movies that, you know, depending on where you're listening from, mm-hmm. it may or may not come to your town.
Yes, you may have to work for the DVD.
You may, or if you have On Demand on your cable, it'll probably end up like on IFC or Sundance or one of those things.
Absolutely.
But it is a movie about Diana Vreeland, who was the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine during the time that we consider the best. And before that, she was the fashion editor for Harper's Bazaar. Mm-hmm. And then after she was unceremoniously dumped at Vogue,
mm-hmm.
she then took over the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum in New York
turned
it into the event and cultural touchstone that it is now. And this documentary is about her and her life, but it's really about the 20th century mm-hmm. because she was there.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it starts
when did she pass away?
I think she passed away like in 94 or something like that, or 95.
Oh, okay.
And so
in the 90s.
I'm pretty sure her granddaughter is the person who made the film.
Mm-hmm.
Her children are interviewed. But she was a flapper in the 20s. You know, so she went through it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite quote that I've been saying to people is at one point where she's talking about right after World War II, and she said, well, you know, there were two very important things that came out of World War II. Well, one was, of course, world peace, and then the other was the bikini.
Yeah, the
and
bikini.
She's dead serious about the bikini, but what she's also saying is that culturally, women went to work during World War II. Their husbands came home and tried to then stifle them back into going back into the kitchen. And women said, uh-uh. And so the repression of the 50s
mm-hmm.
then led to, guess what? The bikini.
The bikini.
Right? So, like, it was this revolution in the same way that the 1920s, the flapper era. Suddenly you could see women's knees.
Right.
And their ankles.
Right.
And then suddenly in the 60s, you could see women's bellies and their... I mean, it was a revolution. I mean, so the movie's about fashion and it's about culture, but really it's about the 20th century. And it's... I said to a friend of mine, sort of a film buff like myself, like a film nerd,
mm-hmm.
And I said that she became, while I was watching this movie, not only one of my favorite sort of characters, but she became my favorite philosopher. Like, somebody says something to her about how much...
just that thought alone is like
exactly
brilliant.
Well, somebody said, you love blush, don't you? You love color. You love, and she's like, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, we spend most of our lives so drab, black and white. A little color, what does it hurt? And I thought, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
If every choice we make has even just a tiny bit of aesthetic in it,
mm-hmm.
how lovely we all feel. There's just something. And then at one point, she's like, oh, got to be 100 years old in the documentary, and she says, you know what I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, the most interesting woman, not a naturally pretty woman, but a mm-hmm. fabulous looking woman.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know what I really love? Surfing. And you're like, what? And the way the film itself is curated, right? The images that they use that aren't just her, that the images that is really brilliant. It's like going to an exhibit. It's almost like you've gone to an exhibit of Diana Vreeland.
Hmm.
But anyway, so then she explains that surfing, it's about... There's, you know, there's on the water, there's only you and the water below you and the sky
the
above you. And
she,
so exactly,
which
she
is
says,
what surfers say.
And
it
so
is.
She says, you know, I'm just so angry that I missed it, meaning that she was too old before she was aware that there was such thing as surfing. You know, she'd break a hip. And
right.
So she goes on this whole thing about how amazing and beautiful surfing is. And then as sort of a side note, she says, and skateboarding, isn't that fabulous? And I thought, this 100-year-old woman is... 15, 20 years ago sort of pointed the skater boy culture out before it became a thing even.
Yeah.
Like, up until the day she died, she was still looking around and looking at what was new and mm-hmm. what was different. I mean, she was the person who put Barbara Streisand on the cover of Vogue and said, mm-hmm. this is a beautiful person.
Mm-hmm.
She put made Angelica Houston a famous model.
Right.
These are not what we consider necessarily model faces.
Yeah.
Right? She put Mick Jagger in a magazine mm-hmm. for the first time and said, mm-hmm. this is a beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
She just was there. Hmm. Isn't that fascinating, right?
So fascinating. Check it out. I want to see it. I know. I'm so sorry that I missed
it. Maybe the best movie of the year.
Wow. Okay. Well, then I hope it does go on demand or something like that. Yeah. You spoke of Barbara Streisand, mm-hmm. and I know that if anybody follows Mitchell on the Facebook.
And please do.
On the Face pages. You know that
I should have a blog, but I don't have a blog. I just do it on Facebook.
That's okay. We like that you do it on Facebook. I like that you do it on Facebook. So you've been kind of having this journey through Barbara and her career.
Well, Barbara's my diva. It's my religion.
This month. This is your birthday month. So
it's my birthday month. I have one religion. It's the Tao of Barbara. I think any lesson you need to learn in life can be taught through the lessons of Barbara. And so I just started on October 1st going through her career. Right now I'm at 1980. In fact, when I leave here, I'm going to blog about the album Guilty, which came out in 1980.
Mm, love Guilty.
Guilty is my absolute number one favorite Barbara album of all time to this day. It is still not dated. It's still gorgeous.
I think Guilty may be mine too. I know I said, well, I love The Main Event because you put that the other day.
Main Event, but that's
I
a great jam. That song. That's a great jam.
And then, and I wanted to have a house that looked like a boxing glove. And,
that's really weird.
Thank you. And then, before that, the
Wet album, right?
And it wasn't even raining yet. But the rain the next day.
Perfectly on a generation.
But Wet was just to me like.
But Guilty is just genius.
Wet was like to me that connection of her and Donna Summer. And Donna Summer was such a huge influence
yeah, me too.
Of my life. And it was like, well, which album are you going to buy Enough is Enough on? Barbara's album or Donna's album? Why not buy both?
Exactly.
Which is what we did.
I did too. We all did, right?
Of course we did.
We all did. And we all had that poster of Donna Summer sitting on the old fashioned jukebox.
Come on.
Right?
Brilliant, you know? But you know. But I also am a huge Bee Gees fan.
Me too. I love
Saturday
the Bee Gees.
Night Fever.
The combo
you know?
Of
and so Barbara.
If
and
there's
Barry,
anybody who's out there who doesn't know, in 1980, right after the huge juggernaut that was Saturday Night Fever, people were sort of burnt out on the Bee
Gees.
And which
is crazy because the Bee Gees were not going to do the music for Saturday Night Fever. Mm. This is a brilliant story. I watched it on like that
like behind the music,
which I didn't even know behind the music Saturday Night Fever. It was more just kind of like the whole making of that film.
Yeah.
Like what a fucking act of God
yeah.
or the Tao of Barbara.
Because right, they were
that
disco
was,
people before.
Well,
I mean,
even just how they were trying to get made, how to get made, and they had to pay off like mob guys like to film in these clubs and
that's
you know, and
story.
How every young actor in New York wanted to be in this movie and it was these series of stories. Anyhow, and nobody wanted the Bee Gees to do it. And then when the Bee Gees scored it, it was just like
it was a phenomenon.
What?
It changed the game as
and
far
it was
as
when,
film.
When they did the opening song to Grease too, right?
Right.
When
they
did. Grease
they wrote
is
it
the
for
word.
Frankie
for
Valli.
The film, right? Grease is the word.
Right, right. Which wasn't, of course, was not in the play.
Right. Was not in the play.
Well, that's the thing.
Anyhow,
they did,
this was all happening like simultaneously with
this
album.
There was a bit
album.
Of a burnout with the Bee Gees as far as like the Bee Gees, like putting the Bee Gees name on it. So they started to write and produce for other people. So Barbara Streisand asked Barry Gibb to do it, and so it just turned out to be one of those collaborations that's just, it's just gorgeous. So I'm going to do that. So I'm doing the whole month, but it has to do with a couple of things. A, she released an album this month of songs from her vaults, right? Songs
right.
from the 60s.
What's it called? Release Me?
Release Me. And so it has a series of songs, 11 songs, that are from every part of her career. So you get to hear her voice in all of its different places and the kinds
so
of
songs.
So they
were actually songs that she
recorded
back then, and that's, yeah. and it's that version of the song.
Exactly. Sometimes what's brilliant about the CD, if you don't have it, is that they've left in where possible, like the very first, not the very first song, but one of the, yes, actually the very first song, but the one I'm thinking of is a Randy Newman song. And you hear the studio, you hear Randy Newman go, wait, maybe she's right, let's try it again. And then she sings it, and then at the end you hear Randy go, well, what'd you think? And she's like, I liked it, I thought it was good. So they've left in all that studio stuff. It was stuff
that
she either just didn't make the cut for the album for whatever reasons, maybe she didn't like a note she sang, not that it was a bad note, but she just didn't like it, or there was an instrumentation, and her perfectionism stopped it from getting released. Mm. And so she's been able to go back. This is part of the Tao of Barbara, to be able to look back and be gentler with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
See how the Tao of Barbara works?
See, and your brother, who was just here.
My brother's just here.
Who's yours is Barbara, his is
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks did the same thing with Shangri-La. She had all this music that
right.
she needed to put on an album, and so she recorded, she put all of those songs. Now, she re-recorded them.
Right.
But
yeah, Barbara just released them because they
were
in
she
form.
Writes them. I mean,
right.
Stevie writes them, Barbara doesn't. But right. I love that she did that. Like, all this stuff that she had written that,
right,
you
didn't
know,
make the cut back
like
in the day.
Like from 1978
exactly.
and 84, you know.
Yeah, so I'm doing the whole month, and because not only does Barbara have a, is it my birthday month? So it's my present to myself. Also,
she's on tour.
She's on tour, and I'm going to see her on the 26th in Chicago.
Yep.
And so it's been interesting. I post every day. And for those people who are Facebook people, you know that when somebody posts a lot, it shows up on your news feed. But you also know that you can hide it if you want to or simply scroll past it. And most people in my life have sent me amazing messages or chimed in or like, oh, I love that song, or this was my favorite, or I didn't know she sang that. And what's been really fun is like people who were not fans or not to stereotype, but, you know, Barbara is a gay icon. I mean, obviously, before she was a gay icon, she's the most successful. I mean, she's not just a gay icon. She's the most successful female singer in history. People think it's Mariah Carey. It's not. It's Barbara. It's only Sinatra and the Beatles are in front of Barbara.
Yeah.
So anyway, I get these cute messages every once in a while from these straight guy friends of mine who've been quietly following my posts. Because I post videos. I talk about what she was doing, what it meant, progress, and I try to connect it to sort of like personal growth and stuff like that. It's annoying and obsessive and embarrassing, but I'm loving
it. It's 30 days.
Anyway, it's 30 days.
31.
So ignore me if you don't like it. But then I get messages from like sweet straight boys who are like, I just want to let you know I blame you for the rabbit hole that you've sent me down. I had no idea how beautiful she was. I had no idea what a great actress she was. I had no idea that she was this person or that she was a pioneer in so many ways. I haven't even gotten to Yento, right? So I haven't even gotten to her directing yet.
Well, geez, you haven't even gotten to the fact where they're like pissed off that she lights herself well or pissed off off that she's producing acting. And now, you know, of
that's
course, like Kevin Costner does it for Dances with Wolves and we think blah, 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 or Warren Beatty.
Exactly, that's where I'm going. Nobody says, who does Warren Beatty think he
is Ben Affleck
to make himself look good in a movie?
Argo.
She does it, and it's literally like, who does this woman think she is? Once again, the Tao of Barbara. It's like, you are exactly who you think you are.
Exactly.
So anyway, so if you're on the Facebook and you want to, and my stuff is not private, so you could check it out if you want.
Yeah.
And so I just post videos and I talk about it. Like I said, tonight I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to, this will drive people crazy. I'm going to post a link to every single song from Guilty.
Please do.
Every single song.
Please do.
And I'm going to talk about every single song.
Okay, I want that. Yeah. Is that going to be the whole week or that's just
No, that's tonight.
Oh my God. Well, drink some Marcy. Thank you for spending some of the time with me. Do you like, you know, because when you say Barbara Streisand, like I have a million different favorites, you know, like I have so many and I really love her album right before this one. You know, I love the symphony and the one with
Diana Krall.
And Diana Krall helped to produce What Matters Most. And you know, there's just some songs in there that just kill me, know. But I do, you know, like I put this as my comment on your thing and we talk about the main event and we laugh, but like I am, you know, music transports us, obviously, and I just think like her music specifically based on my age, maybe your age or whatever, you know, just captures me. And you know, it's weird, like you watch these television shows now, like I've started watching X Factor, which you know, I think I've mentioned this, maybe I haven't mentioned this on the podcast, but you know, I've kind of, I mean, I don't actually watch a ton of reality television, but somehow I've kind of watched that. But to see the adoration these people have for, you know, I don't know who it is, like are The Voice, you know, people who have a real adoration for Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears or Adam Levine or whatever these people, you know that who their people are. And I kind of feel like you broke the mold with Barbara Streisand. Like, we're not going to have another. It's like they come like once in a.
The one we just lost was Whitney Houston. I think there's an entire generation
that feels so emotional. Michael Jackson, of course.
So who's the new one? I think maybe if she sticks around, that Adele might be that person I think people love Adele. Love Adele for a lot of reasons. They love Adele because she's herself. They love Adele because she's a real singer. They love her because she's telling truths.
Yeah.
She's not afraid of being emotional.
She's not the traditional.
She's not traditionally beautiful.
Yeah, although I think she's gorgeous.
Oh, she's stunning, but she's, you know, she's not a twig.
Yeah, but I mean, there's just like these songs, like, you know, who can listen to The Way We Were and
Forget
not
it.
Cry? And who, I can't listen to The Main Event and be mad at you. You could be my sworn enemy across from me, and if The Main Event
That's
came
what
on,
I said about Enough
I would
is Enough.
Be like, I said Enough is Enough is the same way. I absolutely am happy. I'm happy. I'm joyful. I could walk in upset. So I'm just, as one of my close friends who lives in my house, and, you know, if you ever see me unhappy, you just have to play the main event yeah. or Enough is Enough.
That's what I said on my post about Enough is Enough was, first of all, it was suggested to her by Barbara's gay son, Jason, who's on tour with her. He said, Mom, I love Donna Summer. You should sing with her. He was like 13 because we're the same age.
Because history is made. Of course.
And so what I said in my post was like, if you do not find yourself filled with joy from the crazy diva vocals, if you're not dancing your ass off, if you're not belting at the top of your lungs while driving, right? It's one of those songs that if you're not doing that, then you need to come and visit me because you need a little joy in your life.
Yeah.
Seriously, I don't care who you are, straight, gay, young or old, I don't care what your story is. If that song doesn't give you a little bit of a joy boost, then you need to come to the Nook and hang out for a bit.
You need to hang out in our house.
Seriously.
But we don't have room for all of you.
No, well, so we're going to have to do one at a time. Yeah.
One at a time. Well, we want the Barbara review after you see her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I saw her the last time she was in town. So you'll give us the 411 for those of us who are
I'm
not
I'm really excited about it. She's got great reviews in New York.
Pretty exciting. Well, everybody, I hope you have a good week. We're heading fast and furious into Mitchell's birthday. The High Holy Days of Gayness and the Dahel of Barbara.
Right.
And Halloween. So, you know, we'll have another show for you next time, but get those Halloween costumes and gear and maybe get you some kinky boots.
Wear some kinky boots.
Wear some kinky boots.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.